episode 109 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded November 23rd, 2016. Comfort Food TV. TV, guys.
Because it's a food-themed week. It's Thanksgiving. We're all about to stuff ourselves with turkey and stuffing.
But by the time this episode comes out, you done did it.
But that's... You're speaking of time travel there, Grant. Which is thematically appropriate, because we are going to be talking about timeless.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That works, right? we're going to be talking about food... Food shows at all.
No, Comfort Food TV. What we're talking about here is shows that are maybe not like our top 10 or even our top 20, but shows you turn on and you get a nice warm feel and you enjoy them. Like network shows that are hitting that spot for us.
Or maybe like network shows that you see there and you put a little bit on your plate and then you get back to the table and you take a bite and you're like, oh, I'm just going to leave that there and maybe not finish all of this.
So you guys are saying that's what we're discussing, and yet I spent all week watching Food Network.
Oh, great.
I thought we were going to talk about Chopped the entire time.
Yeah, let's talk about every episode of Chopped. Let's run it down.
Have you guys had a Chopped episode?
No, but we should do that.
Well, before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And we got a little bit of house cleaning, guys. First off, we want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of you guys. Enjoy this Thanksgiving. It may be your only happy Thanksgiving left.
You know what I just realized? You know what? I bet a lot of our newer listeners don't know is that we used to do YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And if you're a Thanksgiving fan and you want to see me and Grant doing turkey impressions, you should go to YouTube and find that on the channel.
You're a lot less embarrassed about that video than me.
Oh, it's one of my proudest moments.
One of your proudest.
It's amazing.
Wow.
It's like the chicken sounds from Arrested Development to me.
I mean, I can't really go that far. But yeah, by all means, guys, check that out. If you dare. We do want to say that if you guys want to help support the show, there are a couple ways that you can do that. First off, iTunes. Go to the iTunes store, give us a 5-star rating, write us a review. I think you have to have an account, so use your credit card and make an account there. But give us a review. That really helps raise our visibility. Most people listen to us via iTunes. If you guys are doing this, listening to us like on Stitcher or some other sort of podcast catching app, go ahead and give us a review there. I mean, it's a great free way to help us out, and we really appreciate it. If you do that, send us a line if it's not on iTunes, so we're aware of it. Another way to help us out is over at patreon.com/TVDudes. This is a way you guys can actually financially support us. If you guys have a job and you're feeling charitable enough that you guys want to help support what we do and you enjoy our show, please do that. You can give us $1 an episode, and in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content. We discussed all sorts of things. I think last week you guys reviewed Doctor Strange, gave us our thoughts. Mm. That doesn't really fit into our general discussion of television, but it is part of our side geekery that we want to get out occasionally.
Yep.
So, yeah, check that out. And patreon.com/TVDudes. A third way you can support us, although maybe it's not a third way. A third way, we're also delivering content to you guys. BeachCopDetectives.com.
Yes, indeed.
We've released episode 12 at this point.
Yep.
That means we have one last episode, Randy.
It does. One episode with TV critic Alan Sepinwall as our final guest.
That's a big get.
Yeah. Alan and I have known each other a while via Usenet, and he was the guy who sort of put me on a Terry's in the first place. And so I reached out figuring he was probably going to be like, hey, that's great, I'm busy. But he was like, yeah, I can guest on podcasts. And we managed to work it out. So me and Alan will talk the final episode of Terriers. And then we might do one last wrap-up episode with me and Grant and Nate where we sort of talk about the show.
I thought I was going to get to be on an episode, on the final episode.
You were?
I did all this work for you. Yeah. I was really counting on it.
Yeah.
And then motherfucking Alan Sepinwall stole my spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm looking forward to doing the final wrap up with you.
Yeah. We've also got some exciting interviews coming up. Sean Ryan, mm-hmm. composer Rob Duncan, mm-hmm. and of course, our exit interview with the man himself, Ted Griffin.
Awesome. Awesome.
Ooh.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff, guys. So once again, check that out. BeachCopDetectives.com. Oh, and a little bit of other news. We have prints of all of the artwork that Nate Bliss drew that I helped color. He's going to be putting up a website in the next couple days. And hopefully by next week, before our last episode, we will have a little store. So that'll be a surprise that everyone can go and buy prints.
Yeah, people have been asking about those prints. I've had numerous people ask me about getting prints. Yeah, especially the people who are on the show who want like the prints that Nate did of them.
Yeah.
But people seem very excited, and it's great art, and I'm glad that people will be able to pick
it up. It's kind of funny. It's a detective show, and you're taking prints. from the detective show.
Yes.
The show about the detective show.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you guys for the support that you do give us. And moving on, if you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, you guys can ask us questions once a week and we will try our best to answer those. And our first question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, "Hey, TV dudes, with the holidays swiftly approaching, I just wanted to let you know that I was thankful for your podcast."
Aww.
That's pretty sweet. And it should be noted that I was thankful for you like a whole month earlier because, you know, I'm Canadian. So, on to my question. What TV moments do you find uplifting even when the world has got you down? What are your F yeah moments?
Well, I don't know why I'd be looking for that kind of thing in TV right now, like a life affirming kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'll always go to Aaron Sorkin and West Wing. There's a lot of moments in Aaron Sorkin's West Wing.
Want like positivity in like your politics?
Yeah, for some reason I kind of hope and noble people with ideals. It's kind of what I like.
Mm.
And so like when he comes in the end of the first episode, when he comes and gives that speech to the religious right guys who are sort of bullying Josh and Toby, that's a fantastic moment.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's tons of moments like that. The moment where, and I've just been rewatching it because of West Wing Weekly, the moment where Leo sort of dresses down this woman who leaked out his personal info and started this whole shitstorm. And she comes in the office and Sam has already fired her, and she comes in to talk to Leo. And he doesn't dress her down. He just sort of talks to her about it. And in the end, sort of says, you know, do you like work at the White House? And he says, why don't we give each other another chance? That's the kind of thing that Sorkin does really well. Mm-hmm. The sort of understanding that Sorkin is very much a biased guy. Like, we know what side he's on.
Yeah.
But he does his best to have characters from the other side and to indicate they're not all necessarily demonic, evil people, that sometimes they're just do the wrong thing. And that the good thing is our guys sometimes give them a chance. I think there might be a message in that right now, too. I'd sure like to believe that we can reach across and have the other side is not demonic. I'd really like to believe that.
What about you, Kyle?
Well, you mentioned Aaron Sorkin. I think of Jeff Daniels' big speech in the very first episode of Newsroom.
Yeah.
With that great close where it's, why is America the greatest country in the world? It's not.
Yeah.
And that's just moving stuff. Gosh, I can't think of anything.
Do you find it uplifting?
Oh, yeah, super uplifting. Well, it's more
idealistic.
Yeah, it was idealistic, but he kind of like put this girl in her place. So it's uplifting to be like, you know, you thought the bubble was this big. It's actually much bigger.
And
yeah, that's how you get it. But, you know, I think of, and again, this is a bad example because it was kind of a sad moment, but did either of you catch Colbert's last episode?
No.
Where he had a big musical number at the end?
Huh.
And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I was tearing up. And yeah, it was sad because it was his last show, but I mean, it was also just kind of just left you so hopeful. And yeah, it was one of the more powerful things I've seen on TV.
I was going to say something, you know, some of the sappier moments from Friday Night Lights. I find those pretty uplifting about community and, you know, kind of coming together and helping when things look bad, because like in the pilot episode when Street gets paralyzed.
Yeah.
And they come back and back up Saracen, and he, you know, at least helps them finish out the game. It's kind of, there's some positivity to that. I like that. But I think the most uplifting thing recently was The premiere episode where Negan bashes in those two heads.
Yeah, yeah, that was yeah.
From Walking Dead. It was mm-hmm. so fantastic. I was like, yeah. I feel great about everything in the world.
I literally haven't watched a second episode this season, not because I don't want to, just because I'm like, I'm not ready for it. I can't handle more of that right now.
Jesus, dude. All right, let's go on to our next question. Zach McLernan says, so it seems Arrow has had, with the exception of a weak start, a pretty good season so far, while Flash is just starting to get on its feet. But I don't think you meant that as a joke, sorry. But shows promise. Meanwhile, Legends of Tomorrow continues to be its own brand of new silly time adventures of the week. With the mid-season finales only a few weeks away, what is your assessment so far of the CW DC shows and your thoughts for its future?
I watched one episode of Arrow and have not caught back up. So if it's been good, whoops.
So you just haven't been staying up to date?
No, I'm not up to date on that one. And Legends of Tomorrow, I watched two of them. No, I watched the first episode of that. I liked it well enough. The trick, and I can't remember, it was Kyle Volte who suggested this. You have to watch Legends of Tomorrow like it's a bunch of gamers having an RPG session and the DM just trying to keep up with it. And it's a lot more fun. Like that's the best way to watch Legends of Tomorrow. I haven't been watching that either just because too much TV and that fell to the bottom of the pile. However, Flash for me has gotten back to being what I wanted it to be, which is more episode of the week, all the team working together, a little less of the forced romance stuff. And I think Flash right now is sort of humming along where it was in season two before it sort of jumped the King Shark.
Yeah.
Nice.
And Supergirl I love. I love Supergirl. It's doing everything I wanted to do.
Kyle?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm only watching Legends of Tomorrow. I really like that timey stuff. What do you call it? Time of the week shows?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, those are my favorite.
Les told me that the 80s episode was particularly entertaining.
You know, I'm a little behind that.
Oh, okay. I know there's an 80s episode coming, and he told me to watch that one.
I normally am not a huge CW fan. That one, it's kind of got me, though.
Okay.
So Justin Zarian says, of the shows released in the 2010s so far, what do you feel are or have potential to be referred to as the decade-defining shows? And why do you feel they are that influential?
Fargo, for sure. If nothing else, because it showed that you can do a movie adaptation to TV, and it can be great and standalone, even though it's based on something else. And because more even than American Horror Story, I think it showed the promise of the series of miniseries approach. Mm. I think Fargo deserves a lot of credit for both of those things.
I mean, Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Something that defines this century.
Yeah. Really century, Game of Thrones is going to go down as the show of the teens. Are we calling this the decade? The teens? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But totally, because it is full on embracing fantasy and political intrigue in a way that everyone else is going to be emulating for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So,
well, I think when critics talk about this time, you're going to hear shows like House of Cards mentioned, mm-hmm. all of kind of TV going to the web, like digital streaming taking off like that. The shows that tend to be binged watched more often, I imagine, will probably be thought of more, even though I'm thinking of something like Parks and Rec, which, you know, necessarily wasn't this decade. But, I mean, that's another show that kind of found a whole other audience when it hit streaming.
That's true. I mean, what is the streaming show that's sort of broken out? House of Cards is an obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But House of Cards is uneven, I think. Is there even a streaming
Orange
show?
Orange is the New Black might have been.
Orange is the New Black is probably...
That was pretty universally loved.
Yeah. What do you guys think Walking Dead's legacy is going to be, historically?
That show from season to season can just be all over the place. Like, I was just thinking about that very first season, mm-hmm. and how it kind of existed on its own. And, you know, three seasons later, it's a totally different show. Three seasons later, totally different show. And then now we're here with this guy and the baseball bat and whatever the hell's going on now.
Do you think it's going to hold up, like, long term? Do you think people are going to remember it as one of the greats? Or will it be one of those shows like, you know, Three's Company or whatever, where everybody was watching it, but it was never great?
I lean toward the latter because I always think the quality has been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
The show's draw is more of escapism than I think immersion and,
yeah.
and great storytelling. People love a good, fun, scary zombie movie.
Yeah.
And in this case, a scary TV mm-hmm. show. And they like the adventure and honestly, the brutality of it.
Yeah.
They love seeing a bunch of people get killed, but it's a little bit more brainless, a little more thoughtless and brainless.
Yeah.
but I think that's it's more in line of like Sons of Anarchy than I would ever put it, you know, in an echelon with like the Americans.
what's the defining comedy of the teens? I mean, the ones I can think of are like You're the Worst, which is never going to be, that's always going to be a cult hit at best.
Louis.
Yeah.
As far as paving a way for... Yeah. Artists really have a much more hands-on approach to not follow the linear logic of storytelling, but be able to kind of break away and do their own thing. I mean, Atlanta is fully following
yeah, in the,
that
true.
Kind of footsteps.
So did Better Things.
Better Things.
You know, Matt Zoller-Seitz has coined the term comedy in theory for that kind of thing, which I think is great because it gives you that sort of that genre.
Yeah.
I think if for nothing else, everybody's going to remember Veep. Not for being a great show for predicting our current political situation.
Yeah. Veep and Silicon Valley. Definitely go down. It's whoa, wow.
One of the great comedies.
So. All right. Next one comes to us from Benjamin Hamill, who says, You're the Worst just finished its third season.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys, those who watch it anyway, Randy, think about the ending?
Am I the only one here who's watched that?
Yeah, I haven't been watching it.
Oh, man. I loved it. I love You're the Worst, and I thought the final ending, I was actually getting a little teary and like, oh, look, they can do sweet comedy. And then they did that gut punch thing that they always do at the end of You're the Worst, where it does the sweet... Oh, they're going to be together. And then whether it's the first season where there's like the uncertainty about living together, the second season, which definitely brought the depression thing back to the forefront, or this third season, that little gut punch of Jimmy's realization that she had just said the exact worst thing. I thought the actual end moment was a punch in the gut and is really effective in what the show does really well. Overall, I thought this was a really strong season. I thought they did a great job with Edgar and his girlfriend. I thought that what they did with Jimmy and his father was really interesting. And I loved everything with Gretchen and Paul, even though it was sometimes cringe-inducing to watch.
Yeah. Well, okay. I haven't watched it. But our last question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, Hi, dudes. Since Thanksgiving is this week in the U.S., what are your favorite Thanksgiving episodes? For me, classic shows like The Simpsons and Family Matters come to mind, but recent shows seem to have a yearly Thanksgiving episode. Do you guys prefer having yearly holiday episodes or having occasional special episodes to celebrate holidays?
You nailed it earlier. Actually, when I read this, first thing I thought of was the Thanksgiving episode of The West Wing, season 2, where they have like a couple of major storylines going, but it's all about Bartlett pardoning the turkey mm-hmm. and then Charlie trying to find like the perfect gift, like this perfect cutting knife.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charlie has a moment with the president at the end where you feel like, oh, the president's talking to me.
Yeah.
That's pretty special.
I don't recall any. Really offhand.
Friends, and I know it hurts credibility to bring up Friends, but
is that with the turkey on the head?
No, that's actually not related to Thanksgiving, or at least not that. It must be, but it's not the one I remember. No, there's one where they all go out and play football in the park, and it's guys
such
versus
a
girls.
Terrible episode.
I love that episode.
So corny. Like yes. All the jokes felt.
It is corny.
I hated that episode.
I love that episode. I have a huge fondness for that episode.
I'll take it a step further. I hate anyone who liked that episode.
Oh, I see. Well,
the line has been drawn.
Thanksgiving indeed, my friend.
And everybody's going to point to the WKRP in Cincinnati episode where the turkeys, I swear with God as my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah.
That's a classic. But to get to the question, I like holiday episodes. Halloween episodes, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine's Halloween episodes, Christmas episodes. I'm sure somebody's done a great Arbor Day episode somewhere. I am all for holiday episodes.
Huh. Well, you know, you're wrong. I mean, I don't know. They've never really... I like Halloween, I guess, a bit, because it's fun seeing the creativity of costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember Community. I really like seeing those.
Oh, yeah.
But otherwise...
SNL this week had a great Halloween or Thanksgiving tribute. Kristen Wiig starts this Thanksgiving song where she's getting all these facts about Thanksgiving just totally wrong. And then you get to the end of the song and you're and the whole gag is we've made up all of this. Like, that's the whole point of it. This is a made up holiday. Like, it's just about, you know, being with the people you love.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I think Thanksgiving is a good spine on which to build a story. Thanksgiving is about family getting together. It's also about eating a lot of food, so it's great for Food Network. But that's not what we're talking about this week, Grant.
Damn it.
Yeah. But if you're doing a story about family conflict, Thanksgiving is a perfect place to have that kind of conflict.
Yeah. Well, before we go into the breaks, guys, I did also want to mention that Permanent Record is the network that we are now a part of. And, you know, we don't actually mention them very often. But, yeah, we are part of this TV network, network of a whole bunch of shows. The TV Dudes, Beach Cop Detectives, the Mr. Robot O podcast, and Pilot Watching, FemTV, and Marvel TV Binge are all part of this network. If you guys haven't checked them out, please go to Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
There we go. .com. And you can check that out. But we just had a new podcast launch, and I wanted to give a shout out to that as well. Gilmore Girls is not a show that I feel we will ever really talk about on here.
Not true. We're having Les Wyler come on specifically to talk about it.
Oh, really?
Because he's the only one of the five of us who's watched it.
Okay, cool. Because it's not really in my wheelhouse. I'll say that. But the new show called Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, is debuting pretty soon on Netflix. And it's, you know, it's a resurrection of the show that used to be on the CW, I think, right? And
sounds about right.
Why do I not? I just don't know any about
people who listen to our show will correct us. Never.
But Mike Moody and Key from Key and Clyde over at Pilot Watching, they are doing a Gilmore Girl podcast, and it's called Gilmored with a ED at the end of, or I guess a D at the end. Anyway, go check it out, guys. I'm sure they are doing a great job.
You know, the thing is, I actually want to watch Gilmore Girls at some point. I have some friends who I very much respect have talked about how great it is. Mm. I know it's supposed to be really good. It's just one of those things, it's like 22 episode seasons, and there's a lot of it. And so I don't know when I'm going to get around to it.
Yeah, it's a lot to try and catch up on.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have Full House I have to catch up on so I can watch Fuller House. So, you know, I'll put this on my back docket.
I don't think continuity is really a big issue with that show.
No?
No, if you watch it in the wrong order, the kids get older and older. Actually, that's the right order.
Yeah. In the right
that's
order.
The right order. Yeah. Brian Fuller has left Star Trek. This is news we'd had a little while ago.
Yeah.
But Michelle Yeoh is joining Star Trek.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah. In what capacity, though?
She is going to be joining as...
a captain of some sort, right?
Is she a captain? Okay, yeah. She plays Han Bo, who runs another ship called the Shenzo, which will have a big role in the first season.
So, okay, she's going to be a... another captain.
Like maybe a free trader or something. It sounds like she might not be a Starfleet captain.
Oh. I mean, it'd be interesting to see her as a actual lead in the show.
Yeah.
But I guess they're not necessarily having her be the captain of this ship.
No, but that's still cool to have her in.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the story will revolve around multiple ships and not just one crew.
That's true.
I don't think I've seen her on TV before either.
She was on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon on Netflix. And she was on Marco Polo on Netflix, but she hasn't been on TV, just Netflix.
Gotcha.
So,
well, something to keep an eye on then.
Yeah. Comedian Brett Gelman, who we all love. And Johnny Neal really loved Brett Gelman.
Yeah, he had a weird crush on him.
Yeah. Brett Gelman was in the news a little bit recently for leaving Adult Swim.
Whoa. Yeah.
Off of the he was not fond of their management, I guess.
I think he said he didn't like some of their lack of diversity issues, yeah, too, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
But he has landed on his feet because he's taking a role in Stranger Things season 2.
Awesome.
Man, he is going to be playing a man named Murray Bauman, described as a disgraced journalist turned conspiracy theorist who is investigating a cold case in Hawkins.
Alex Jones, great. He's been legitimized even in Stranger Things.
I'd love to see this guy do some range because, yeah, most of the time when you see his comedy, it's over the top and it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, he's always good. No matter, even if he's in a show that's not good, like when he was in Married, he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vin Diesel is unlikely, that's in quotes, to play Black Bolt in Marvel's Inhumans. I'm not a fan of stories that are non-story. Like, this is a story about something not happening. I love this story because it's so disdainful of Marvel's TV, their ABC TV, which I am also disdainful of.
Yes.
Because somebody asked during a Facebook Q&A with James Gunn, whether Vin Diesel will portray Black Bolt, the ruler of the Inhumans. Vin Diesel had been sort of hinting in that direction when it was going to be a movie. Now it's been demoted to a TV show. James Gunn's answer is, the Inhumans is going to be a TV show. Unless Vin wants to take a huge pay cut and sign up to do a TV show, it seems unlikely.
Yeah.
That is harsh. Now, I want to say, Mr. Gunn, let's not poo-poo TV as a medium here. But he's not wrong that, like, movie stars don't come to do a silent part on a TV show.
Exactly. It's also kind of a thankless role because you stand there silently and you do some action moves. You know who they should get to do it?
Who's?
Is that Darth Maul dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ray Park, he could totally do it.
Yeah, he can stand there and wear a costume and not say anything.
Yeah, Ray Park actually might be perfect casting for Black Bolt.
And if not him, then get Doug Jones.
Yeah.
Is that the dude who plays Abe Sapien?
Or if not him, just carve a block of wood into the shape of Black Bolt and roll him around on the set, because who gives a fuck? He doesn't say anything.
It's like a season-long mannequin challenge.
At any rate, Vin Diesel's other quote that he told MTV last year was, "It's not a matter of me wooing Marvel, it's a matter of Marvel wooing me."
It's a matter of Marvel wooing me, dog.
So if you had your hopes up that Vin Diesel was going to be Black Bolt, I would dash those.
I'm kind of bummed not to see an Inhumans movie, not going to lie.
Yeah. They could have been interesting.
I'm definitely getting into the comics more, and I find the story interesting. And there's a lot you can do. They're like their own sovereign nation. I mean, there's a million ways you can go with that.
I'm a big fan of Charles Soule, who's the writer and the guy who's sort of been sort of showrunning all those. I cannot get into the Inhumans. I've tried. I just don't care about any of them.
Yeah.
And I've never been a fan of the royal family either. So,
Have you read the recent issue about the Reader, character of the Reader?
Nope.
Now, I might check that character out. Very interesting. All yeah. Right. He's a guy who anything he reads comes to life. And the power was so dangerous that he had his eyes gouged out. He keeps these Braille cards on him. And when he reads the Braille, whatever he reads comes to life. So, like, you know,
he should read Harry Potter.
There you go.
And then
the hero we need.
That's how you get Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. They're all renegade beasts. Do you guys remember that comedy series Men at Work?
Yeah, that did great.
You remember that was, I believe it was called the worst show on TV. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the one where the men dressed up as women in 2012.
Oh yeah, what was that one called?
That was something else. This is Men at Work was actually on TBS.
It had like
four duties that work together.
I'm sure Jerry O'Connell is in it.
Danny Masterson from that 70s show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a bunch of people I didn't know. At any rate, that show was co-created by Brecken Meyer, a dude you'd know if you saw him. He appeared in Clueless, Road Trip, Rat Race.
Oh, he was from Can't Hardly Wait.
Franklin and Bash, Can't Hardly Wait. Meyer is creating and executive producing a new show for ABC. It's an untitled single dad comedy.
Yeah.
As he attempts to navigate fatherhood and the modern world of dating, all while living in the guest house of his ex-wife's new man.
Here's my problem with this. Why do we need it?
You just have one?
Why do we need it? I have an overall problem with this is such a signal of a lack of creativity.
Yeah.
This exact template exists in so many other shows. There's nothing interesting about it. This is just a cash grab.
Yeah.
And it's not interesting anymore. Why do people keep buying into this shit?
I don't know. I don't understand it. I can see a version of this show. Like, if you told me that exact premise and it was being done by Dan Harmon, sure, okay, I know he's got something new to say. I bet you Breckenmeyer has the same thing to say that we all think he has to say about this.
Breckenmeyer, I know you're listening. Hear me out, okay? You want this show to be good. What you do is you make it a show about a dad who's had kids and isn't in their life. You know,
yeah.
Maybe he's selfish. Maybe he's got his own motivations. Maybe he can't be in his kid's life, but like make a story about kids who are like having to grow up without their father. And like, what is that guy actually doing while his kids are growing up?
Yeah.
Like we haven't really heard that story.
Yeah.
And make it a comedy.
Like Louie.
No, yeah. For real though.
Like, yeah. Go in that kind of vein of the, what do we call our genre?
Deadbeat Dad.
I think it's comedy.
Comedy in theory.
Comedy in theory. Yeah.
There we go.
Turn this into a comedy in theory.
ABC can't do comedy in theory.
No, they can't at all.
they can't even do comedy.
Here's my other pitch for you, Breckenmeyer, since I know you're listening. What if instead of being a dad, a single dad who attempts to navigate fatherhood, and the mom, you know what? Keep the whole pitch, but you play all the roles.
What?
You're the dad. You're all three kids. You're the ex-wife's new man. You're the ex-wife. All the roles. One-man show.
What about instead of single dad, it's singularity dad?
Ooh.
And he's this dad who's also the first AI robot that starts teaching itself and surpasses mankind can teach.
Oh, my gosh. There's going to be an alarm clock scene with the kids.
Yeah.
Wake up.
There you go. Three better ideas than this show.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, we have Fox has ordered a pilot for an Antarctica comedy from New Girl creator Liz Merriweather, who's, by the way, one of the youngest women to ever be running her own show. Like, she basically is the Jess. She's very much like Jess.
That's pretty awesome.
And this is the exact opposite of the last story. Like, this is a story called, it's called Thin Ice. It's a woman who reclaims her dreams when she finds herself at the end of the earth in Antarctica, surrounded by a group of brilliant misfits. That is not a story we've seen before.
Northern exposure?
Alaska and Antarctica are a little bit different.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
I like the idea of putting a bunch of weird misfits in a closed, what do we call it? A closed environment.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like the Good Place. You take, not part of the world. It's this other little offshoot. It's a very tight-knit community, and there's a bunch of goofy people there. And then you can just let it be a playground where they kind of mix and match, see how it goes.
I think this is a fantastic idea. And again, I'm willing to give credit to any comedy pilot that is not something we've seen a million times before. I think this will be interesting.
And it's called Thin Ice.
Yeah.
Because global warming, folks.
Yeah.
It's real. It's happening.
Global warming was a hoax created by the Chinese. I read it somewhere.
They're shooting this on location.
That was our commander-in-chief-to-be, my friend. Oh, boy. We're fucked. The first show we are talking about is Timeless over on NBC. This is the one that is co-run by Stephen Kring. Is that Tim Kring? Stephen Kring? Jerry Kring?
Keep going.
Kring. Chris Kringle?
Can I go?
Yeah.
Eric Kripke.
Who's Tim Crean?
He's the guy who did Heroes.
Fuck, that's why I keep having a negative reaction to this show.
Eric Kripke, who did Supernatural, and Sean Ryan, who did The Shield and Terriers and Chicago Code and a number of other things.
Randy, I gotta ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why am I running this show?
No, because that was the best thing ever. Your run of nonsense names who are not running Timeless was it's a source of joy in this Trump-filled world.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Yes. So, Timeless, where they are jumping into different big periods of time where big historical moments throughout time and fucking things up more.
Doctor Who for Americans.
That's The Flash. You're thinking of The Flash.
Oh.
It seems like so far on this show, they keep kind of fudging things and then they come back to the future and they go, yep. Whoa.
I will say, you're two episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle,
I'm caught up, I believe.
You're caught up with me, okay.
What night does it air? Thursdays or Wednesdays?
Let's see. The last one I saw, I have not seen the latest one called Stranded that aired last night, I guess? The
21st. Okay. Never mind.
But
sorry.
I've
the one
got
before that.
The Watergate tape,
yeah.
Which was a great one.
At any rate, huge reveal.
They do, after that second episode, they definitely scale back on the coming back and time has changed kind of thing. They're scaling that back a little bit.
Ah, really?
Yeah, which is too bad because I liked it too.
That was one of the most interesting aspects of
it. But they're focusing on the Rittenhouse stuff, and that's been really interesting. So we should premise it. We talked about this when we first came on, but basically there's a secret government project. There actually is a secret private project.
This is Dharma Initiative, Massive Dynamic, whatever.
Yeah. That they create a time machine, and terrorists basically grab one of their two pilots, played by Matt Frewer, shove him in the time capsule, and they travel back in time to the Hindenburg, at which point Homeland Security takes control of this whole thing, and they put together a team with the other pilot, who happens to be a black man, who does not want to time travel because there's nowhere back for him to go that's good, but they need him because he's the only guy who can learn how to pilot this thing, and a military dude and a historian played by Abigail Spencer. So this team is sent back in what they call the lifeboat, which can only track the time period where the main ship is gone. So they're sort of always reacting to this terrorist group that is going back to change time in ways that are not like, they're not going back to like save Hitler or stop things from happening. They're going back to sort of exacerbate things. Like, instead of killing Lincoln, they're going to wipe out also the Secretary of State and the Vice President and anyone who might have stepped up and sort of kept the continuity of government going. Mm-hmm. Instead of letting the Hindenburg crash, they're going to save it and then crash on the way back when more dignitaries are aboard, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And our team is to go back and stop them from doing this. That's the general premise.
No, you nailed it right there.
And there's one more aspect, which is there's a conspiracy called Rittenhouse,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be using the time machine to change history for their benefit. And the terrorists are working for them, but they also have this diary from our lead character, played by Abigail Spencer, that seems to indicate that maybe in the future she will also be working with them.
Timelines and a diary.
Yeah. It's original very stuff alias, here. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very Doctor Who, too. In fact, it's like 3 seasons ago. They totally did this story. it's like Doctor Who for Americans.
Yeah. Although, a little less wacky.
Yes, very less. Well, that's the Americanized version of it. You know, you got to put an army guy in there. He's got to have a gun.
Sure.
And he's got to be boring.
Yeah.
Does he continue to be boring?
He's boring.
He's pretty boring.
He's a boring character.
Is that due to the actor, you think?
No, I think it's a thankless role. He's fine, but the straight man army guy who always has to be the guy on mission, that's a boring role.
Did you see the Alamo episode?
Yeah.
He gets that's a little bit to do in the Alamo episode. You could see where if this becomes a hit, they could develop his character a bit more.
That's his best episode.
Yeah.
That is definitely his best episode.
But I'll tell you this. He has my favorite line from the entire show.
Really?
It was just like a head explode moment.
Okay.
So you've probably seen in the previews, there's an episode where they go back to World War II and they solve a thing with Ian Fleming.
Yeah.
And they get back, and the gag when they get back is, oh my gosh, you guys just described the plot of Castle Hunter, such and such movie.
Yeah.
And the character you're talking about, he goes, wait, there's a Bond movie I haven't seen. Yeah. All right, see you guys later. I gotta go.
Yeah, they're thanks to their time travel. Yeah. There's a Bond movie. No, there's not only that. It's like there's a Bond movie I haven't seen, and I'm in it.
Yeah, and I'm in it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
So they do give him a couple, like a little bit more definition. He's still the most boring of the three, but part of that is because the leads of this show, Abigail Spencer was on Rectify, mm-hmm. and she plays our historian, Lucy Preston. I love her, and she's great here. And then Malcolm Barrett plays Rufus Carlin, their pilot, and that's the guy who was Lem on Better Off Ted, and he's great here. He's so good.
Yeah.
And they're letting him, they're giving a little depth, because his whole story of, like, being forced to spy on the others, that's a nice little nasty bit.
Yeah, a little blackmail element.
Yeah.
It's fun, this show. It does this little, it's kind of like Quantum Leap. They're jumping into a new situation, new scenario each week. So it has this episodic element, and it's got this longer arcing storyline of, you know, got to stop this evil plot, but we don't really understand it. And the audience is trying to catch up with them to try and figure out the bigger mystery here. Mm-hmm. And I really like what they do, because it could become, you know, just a little bit formulaic,
yeah,
as we're used to. And I'm a little bit disappointed when you guys say that they're saving the day each week, because it didn't seem like the three of them had the skills to be the people who save the day each week.
Well, let me put that into some perspective. Yeah. So by save the day, essentially they save their butts each week.
Yeah.
They definitely set it up to where, you know, a lot of times it's not necessarily that they're trying to make history happen the way that it did, but these terrorists or these, you know, villains of the show, they're trying to exacerbate these situations. So like in the Germany episode, they want to like get Germany these weapons, so they'll do way more destruction than before. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end, they don't stop like Germany from, you know, whatever they're doing, but they stop the guys from, you know, making things worse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely not a case where they're going through and making things better. They're just making them not worse.
Ah.
Yeah.
And I really like, one of the things I like about this is that this is a show that belongs on a network. Like, they are teaching history to a populace that does not know it as well as it probably should.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see it, you could easily ding this show for every episode. They go back, they meet somebody famous, whether it's Ian Fleming or all the people at the Alamo. But at the same time, they give a little shading to that. They teach a lesson about the Alamo. They teach a lesson about World War II, about Wernher von Braun being the rocket guy who helped NASA. They're doing little bits of history teaching in a way that is fun, and you don't feel like it's being force-fed to you. It's like your vegetables, but they're covered in delicious cheese.
Yeah, and I feel like Doctor Who, at its best, was doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like the Agatha Christie episode.
Yeah.
Although she was a fiction author.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever wanted to use a time travel machine to go back and fight Nazis, you don't have to.
No, you can just...
You're living in that time period right now.
You can go forward.
Yeah, there's plenty of Nazis right here in America you can go fight.
Well, you got to fight Nazis in the past. Why don't you just fight them now?
Yeah.
What, are you too good for modern Nazis? Is that what you do? That's what it is?
Well, let's jump over to Fox, which is doing this show, Pitch.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. is the baseball show. I mean, we talked about Timeless and Pitch like a month or two back.
The first one or two episodes.
Yeah, when it first came out. But Pitch is a show of the first female Major League Baseball player that mm-hmm. joined the San Diego Padres. And yeah, I guess it's about eight episodes in.
Yep, we were eight episodes in.
And what are you guys thinking about it?
I really like this show. But I know that my compadre here does not like this show.
Compadre. Yeah, I'm not liking this so much. No,
Kyle, you're not feeling it.
No, I'm not feeling it at all.
Not at all.
Or real quick, the beginning of the episode. Oh, yeah, guys, I don't think I'm going to give that show a good review later. Yeah, I don't really like that show, guys. That's essentially the show in a nutshell.
Did we just do time travel within our own episode?
That was a flashback in our episode.
Nice. Yeah, I'm somewhere in between you guys. I watch the episodes, and I think there's a lot of slickness to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of style. There's money being put into this in a lot of the right places for the production value. But there are some sappy moments that just seem like they drag on a little bit too much. Like, I was watching the episode where they had the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah.
And like for that to be the entire crux of the entire episode, it just felt like they kept like coming back and repeating the same moments and same lessons a little bit too heavy-handedly, and that just reminds me of my problems with network TV. TV feels like they need to be a little bit, they have to cater to a dumber audience.
Well, no,
I'm sorry to say it that way, but it feels that way sometimes. It's just like, show, don't tell.
Well, this is like, as with Timeless, which is sort of delivering history lessons each week, I feel like this is a, hey, let's teach people how baseball, Major League Baseball works every week, because Major League Baseball is contributing to this.
Yeah.
All the uniforms are there. Fox Sports provides all the graphics. Like, this is definitely a bit of a propaganda piece for Major League Baseball to get people enthused about the game.
Yes.
So you get things like the whole episode being about the All-Star game, a whole episode being about the trade deadline and all the things that go into trading players.
Yeah, it was like Moneyball, but less interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Moneyball reference in episode 8. That, like, the guy being played by E from Entourage is basically there because he saw Moneyball and decided that's what he wanted to do with his life. I mean, you're not wrong. And I can, when someone says they don't like it, I can 100% get where you wouldn't like it, because it's slick, but it's clumsy. It's melodramatic. However, I like the cast a lot. I think the production values are fantastic, and it scratches that itch that I have. And I'm not a sports guy, but the same thing I liked about, say, Bull Durham or Major League, that's kind of like, hey, here's a bunch of goofballs having fun playing ball for a living. It does that for me. And I like all the characters. I like Jenny Baker as the lead. I love what Mark Paul Gosselaar's doing here.
What's the actress's name that plays Jenny Baker?
The actress's name that plays Gil, she is Kylie Bunbury.
Kylie Bunbury.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's just kind of wooden. Like, it's
really,
it's, I don't find her role being a lot of depth. It's like a lot of people seem to be playing off of her a lot.
That's true.
And doing a lot of interesting things, but I guess maybe in part it's part of her character that she's like really reserved.
Yeah.
But a person that's really reserved and cautious about all of their movements.
Yeah.
Comes across as very wooden on screen.
That's fair.
Among a bunch of characters.
Where are you guys on Allie Larder, who plays her agent?
I like her a lot.
I like her too. I think she's great here.
Yeah, it's an interesting story where they kind of paint, like, you know, how they got together and kind of what's her interest in this whole deal. But I don't know. I'm going back to what Grant said earlier about how Fox has a way of delivering these shows in a, you can't miss what we're trying to say here.
Yeah.
So much so, one of the episodes, you know, it ends with a big monologue that's really great. It's probably one of the best parts of the episode. But then you listen to this guy talk and you're like, everything that happened in this episode, all the plot points, they were just so he could deliver this monologue here.
They could show it picture over top.
Yeah.
While he's talking.
And, you know, you've talked about the production value because, yeah, everything looks slick. These sets, you know, the way they shoot this thing. But the way that they edit and tell the story, constantly leaning on the flashbacks to kind of get as much information in there as possible. I feel like you could do the same thing better, way better. And you could still hit all these same high points, all this stuff that you guys like, and, you know, write stories that, you know, kind of tell themselves. You don't have to use all the narrative elements.
The flashback feels almost forced into every episode now. Like, it was a neat trick for the first one, but I was watching the episode where she has her ex-boyfriend, the young guy, and it just felt like, Why do we need this
true
backstory? Just are wedging him in now.
That episode at least had a decent reveal where you find out who her boyfriend is.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good moment. But yeah, no, and not only that, but the sound effect they use, it's something you've heard. I feel like I heard it on Melrose Place. Like, no lie. I think it's that old. And then there's like a little lens flare and, oh, she's not wearing a baseball hat and her hair looks, you know, it's up in a different ponytail.
There definitely is a lot of hand holding going on here. I will not deny that.
Kyle, if you want to unleash.
Seriously, give me 2 seconds.
All right.
If you guys really want to know what I think of this show, the second I heard that there was going to be a show called Pitch about a female baseball player, it's like, what woman would agree to be in a show? Pitch. Like,
it rhymes a little bit inconveniently.
They're not
that
trying to hide what they're doing there.
Because she's rich. She has a lot of money. Is that what you mean?
I'm just, it seems
just like the lich.
Because,
yeah.
because like itch, like it'll scratch the itch.
I don't know
baseball.
Why it's offensive. It just feels offensive to me.
Like kitsch. Like it's old school. Like it's kind of like a little retro. Like kind of that thing.
You know, it's closer.
Snitch. Like she tells on people. Like I haven't noticed that as much. I haven't seen that.
All right. We're going to come back to the actual episode we're discussing here. So overall, we're a little bit mixed on this one. And
no,
it looks
you
like...
guys are overall a bit mixed. I want to go on record as really liking this show.
Well, I mean, overall, we're mixed.
As an average.
We haven't come to a consensus.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
But it looks like their ratings are kind of terrible.
Yeah, the ratings are really bad.
They had like a 0.7 in the most recent I saw.
This can't blame me for that. This hasn't even aired yet. I mean,
like, no, Kyle, you went back in time.
Yeah. Flashback. I'm going to tell everybody how awful this show is.
Well, it's time, guys, for us to move into our Westworld talk.
Yeah.
And we are on episode 8. And what'd you guys think here?
Trace Decay. So... did Bernard kill the other girl, too?
I think that's what they were insinuating.
But we haven't seen the body.
We haven't seen
like,
the body.
Because we see some weird like flashback where he remembers something else happening.
Yeah.
Because wait, all these people are just getting triggered left and right.
We need to say spoilers, right? Or I guess our viewers know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, spoilers. We are going to dissect this episode.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, that's one of my favorite moments, though, when he's like, well, have you made me do any kill anybody else? He's like, oh no. And then you see the flashback. Yeah. It's comedic almost. Yeah. Like the you didn't do anything else.
I mean, still, I was complaining about it last week, but I'm still a little bit bummed that he's a robot. That Bernard
really?
Is.
Well, you know, the question that automatically popped up in my head, and one of the things that I love about this show is with every new detail we get, we then start to wonder, oh, how big could this world really be, you know, and ask more questions. So the first thing I wondered is, so now we see Bernard's killed these two characters. Are they going to come back as robots?
I don't think so, but it wouldn't shock me.
I mean, it almost seemed in the scene where he killed...
Well, they said that she was dead. She slipped and fell. And was
right.
Dead.
So that's right. Correct. That's right. Yeah. So they
like,
know.
Like, if they wanted to, like, cover it up, mm-hmm. that'd be interesting
yeah.
to, like,
no,
make
you're
her.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Like, make a robot replace her. Mm-hmm. That'd get into some other, like, freaky shit about, like, just replacing people body snatcher style.
Well, and there's the story about the two guys that are helping the one host.
Maeve,
who wants to escape.
That story was so good this week.
And part of me's like, I mean, maybe there is some bigger thing where they have hosts that are working on the host, and those guys don't realize that they're actually, they're just to, you know, work on these machines.
Those dudes are human. They're way too human. Those dudes are totally human. I'm sure of it.
Oh, everyone's a robot now.
When she slices his throat.
And then she's like, patch him up. I need him.
Yeah. It's just so brutal.
The Maeve stuff this episode was my favorite thing. When she goes in God mode and just starts rewriting stories on the fly.
Yeah.
That was so good.
It was an amazing scene.
Yeah.
Like, I also keep thinking, like, man, when she got cast in this, did she realize you're going to be naked
a lot
the entire time? Yeah.
Well, it makes you wonder.
It looks so, I'm always like, damn, that's going to be cold.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe they throw in a prosthetic? Like a cover up that would go on top of it?
Maybe, but that seems, I don't think so.
Yeah. They actually did that with the guys on Supernatural. Like,
really?
For shirtless scenes, they had, like, perfect six-pack abs that they would put over their, like, six-pack abs that I guess weren't as perfect. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I doubt that.
So, here's a big thing. We're on episode 8 now, but the big episode 7 reveal, where we find out that Ford has got that hidden workshop underneath the house that is off the maps.
Yeah. Yep.
I may have gone back and done a little digging. Early episodes where Bernard is talking to Dolores, they're actually in that workshop. You don't realize it because we haven't seen it in the show yet. But yeah, if you go back and watch...
Oh, when he's sitting there and just like interviewing her?
Yeah, like when she starts having problems before she really goes off on the adventure with the White Hat.
What?
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is we talked about early on how there are all these agendas. Like, clearly they're building the robots for something beyond just, like, Ford wants to keep them in the park and doing his thing, but the board clearly wants to use them for something else. They're much more useful than just as toys. And we were talking about how everybody seemed to have an agenda. There are all these different agendas. And we all thought Bernard had an agenda. But apparently Bernard's agenda was Ford's agenda this whole time.
So Bernard did have an agenda.
Yeah.
And that might be why he seems so human to us.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Do you guys still think his partner, what's his partner's name? Albert?
Arnold.
Arnold. Arnold is a real dude and we're going to see him? Or is Arnold...
I don't know.
Well, are we talking about the grand theory?
The grand theory, yeah.
All right. I think in the grand theory, Arnold is very much a character in the White Hats story.
Ah.
And that the White Hat will eventually, if not encounter Arnold, he'll encounter something, some connection to Arnold or his story that would inspire him to come back to the park and do what he's doing now.
So, Kyle, you have debunked the double timeline story, and then you rebunked it.
I debunked it, and I rebunked it, and I confirmed my rebunk.
Yeah.
So,
let's hear it.
So, my debunk was when Dolores... Before she joins the White Hat on the adventure that they're currently on, she's shot it's the first time she realizes she can use the gun.
Yep.
And then she's shot trying to escape. And that's how the White Hat catches her, or so I thought. I actually went and watched it, and she does not have the gunshot wound when she's there. And when you watch how they edit the scene, the next scene is Bernard with Dolores in the workshop underneath the house that we don't find out about until episode 7.
So you think they tricked us? They jumped from a flashback to a time?
They tricked us.
Nice.
And so this White Hat story is actually being told from Dolores' point of view, and it's Bernard who's going through and asking her the questions, having her explain it.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
So it's really Ford who's asking the questions.
We get another piece of evidence this week because the man in black recognizes Angela, a survivor from the slaughtered settlers, who was the host who greeted William when he showed up. And he says, "Oh, I didn't surprise to see you in here. I guess they never waste a pretty face."
Yeah.
Like the man in black is acting like William would. He's the guy, the way he talks to everybody, where he talks to Dolores and says, "Let's get reacquainted." The way he talks to Teddy, the way he talks, he's talking to all these people that he's known for 30 years in different roles.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you make then of the Man in Black's story about his wife? Because we also know about William's wife or his fiance.
Right.
And he doesn't really want to get married to her. And then we get this reveal that people think that the Man in Black killed his wife. Before coming to the park. Do you think that they're trying to imply that he was always unhappy and finally she dies and he's able to come here?
I think it's worse than that. I think that he married her, fell in love with her, and that they had this great life. But then when she died, even though he had nothing to do with her death, now that people think that she killed herself to get away from him. And it's like this whole thing where all these horrible things that everybody thought about him. I think he was out and living his life. He was being a philanthropist. He thought he was being this guy he was supposed to be. And he came to realize when his wife died that no one ever thought of him as the way he thought of himself.
Yeah.
I think that's where that is. That William was trying his best to be a good guy, that he went back, he did he did the right thing. He married the woman, he was trying to run the company, but was a philanthropist, all that kind of thing. And what he got for it was a daughter who didn't love him and a wife who committed suicide to get away from him. And so he just went back in the game.
Going back to the White Hat theory one more time.
Yep.
I did find another just inconclusive piece of it, right? Is inconclusive where it's like, without a doubt. I'll just use words I know. Without a doubt, this is the piece of evidence that's going to bust the theory wide open.
Okay.
The first scene where he's with the gentleman who leads him kind of to where he's at. You remember he carries that guy with him.
Yeah.
And then he turns out to be the leader of that gang.
The gang, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you go back to earlier episodes, when he's talking with him in dialogue, he says, "Remember that time that we fought Ghost Nation or we outran Ghost Nation?"
Yeah.
And that's what happens in episode 7 when they're on the train.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I imagine if I'd paid closer attention, they probably mentioned the things that happened that we're now seeing in these episodes.
I think they're leading all sorts of clues. So the question now is, do we get the reveal next week?
Yeah, it's got to be, right? Penultimate.
Or will they do it in the final season?
HBO likes to do those in the ninth episode, because then the 10th one is them setting up stuff for the next season, and it's going to be a little bit quieter note, but it's going to be huge on episode 9.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other scene I kind of wanted to discuss real quick, though.
Sure.
And that was when Dolores kind of has her little acid trip when she goes to that town.
Yeah.
And suddenly she sees, like, the training grounds. Like, she has a flashback to when she was being trained there.
Yeah.
And she goes crazy. She goes off the reservation, so to speak, and she kills a whole bunch of people there. She goes on a shooting spree.
Yeah.
And it looked like this big massacre at that church.
Yeah.
And what are we to make of that? Was she just, like, malfunctioning, and that's when, like, Ford took her and then said, well, you have something interesting going on here. Let's see how much we can exacerbate that.
Maybe. Or, I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, like, did this... So the thing that we... I guess the show, it calls the reveries, the mistake that's, mm-hmm. you know, giving them this ability to kind of go outside their programming. Is it something created by Ford, or is it something that Ford saw and then just let happen?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure exactly what Ford's agenda versus Arnold's agenda was. Like, what was it that Arnold wanted? Arnold wanted them to stay very regular, or was Arnold trying to, like, fuck up the system?
Was he trying to wake them up?
Wake them up.
Yeah.
Like, which of them was trying to do that? Because,
Well, here's what I think.
It waffles back and forth.
I think Arnold was the one trying to wake them up to awareness. And I think Ford is trying to make the best park experience he can. I think that is where he's invested. Mm. He wants to make the park something amazing. That's why the reveries and all that kind of stuff. He wants to make this the best park it can be. He has no interest in other use for the robots. He has no interest in the robots. He clearly doesn't care about the robots. He doesn't think of them as human in any way. So I think Arnold is the one who saw sentience as a goal. And I think Ford sees it as a tool.
Well, if murder is not something he's shy about, nope, then he could have potentially killed Arnold.
That's true.
Yeah. Or Arnold ran away and hid, and he's been somewhere and he couldn't find him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think a big detail out there that hasn't been answered yet is when James Marsden's character is first attacked by the hooded men.
Yeah.
He goes to shoot them, and all of the bullets are deflected, insinuating...
Oh, no, we see them again this episode, too. The guy in like, the big buffalo thing.
Yeah.
Like, he attacks, and he seems to be invulnerable to... Is it Dolores' bullets? Who's the man in black with at this point?
It's James Teddy. Marsden. It's Teddy. Yeah, who's killed.
Teddy can't do anything to these guys. They are definitely either reprogrammed hosts or they're guests. And I think they're maybe, because we haven't mentioned Wyatt. We haven't met Wyatt yet. And I think Wyatt is either a special kind of host or is a guest, just like the man in black.
And he gets him to kill a guest.
Yeah.
And that sets shit off.
I think it's possible.
Well, and I loved the little bit where the other story writer is working on a character who he thinks is Wyatt.
Yeah.
And the woman from the board is like, member, no, that's not Wyatt.
By the way, I like that Maeve is the man in black's original sin, that he decided to go in and kill a woman or a child just to see if he could do it. And that she's now remembering it. So they're pitting basically this sort of homicidal big bad of the man in black versus our big bad of Maeve with her ability to hack the park. And that's going to be an interesting confrontation.
I love how everybody in Westworld is so shitty to all those hosts.
Yes.
And yet the man in black, first time he does something like that.
Yep.
And he just gets the one that's going to revenge.
Yep. I suspect with Arnold. I keep coming back to Arnold.
Yeah.
But I suspect, like, we're going to see something along the lines of, yes, Ford killed him.
Yeah.
But Arnold figured out a way to download his own consciousness
right,
and split it into a robot shell. Into, maybe, like, a surrogate somehow.
Maybe so.
And so he exists somewhere in the park. Well,
he's in the center of the maze.
He's the man
in the center of the maze, for sure.
It's going to be the same as Captain America Winter Soldier. He's going to be a part of just like this computer screen talking.
He's going to have a chess face.
Yeah. So we have that to look forward to.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting these last two episodes.
Yep.
But until then, guys, we're going to go ahead and call this an episode. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Kyle. And thank you, dear listeners, for, you know, sticking with us through this Thanksgiving. And we hope that our episode has been a welcome retreat from awkward familyness. And, you know, once again, check us out over at iTunes. Check us out on our Patreon. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.